So, Lee, we've just recorded, and I'm going to call it lucky number 13, 13th podcast in the series with Chris Leslie, the current CSA CEO, who replaced me 3.5 years ago and has done a fantastic job ever since. And I thought really good answers. Clearly, the ex-politician showing through there with the way he answered questions really well and succinctly. What do you think?
He's impressive, isn't he? I didn't realise he was previously Shadow Chancellor, did you say?
Yes, in Ed Miliband's administration, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, again, we say this all the time, but I think it's another interesting listen, different perspective, very informed in terms of his subject. So, yeah, another really good conversation, in my opinion.
And a view from the bridge of the debt collection industry, I guess you'd say, wouldn't you? Some interesting viewpoints on that, consumer duty, what impacts that's having, you know, and talking about consumer duty itself, and was it really designed for the debt collection industry, you know, but it's certainly having its effects and its impacts, and rightly so. I think, you know, the FCA as a regulator has certainly helped what we were doing in the CSA when I was running it to improve the industry. So it's all grits to the mill. But let's waste no more time. Should we listen? Should we run titles?
Let's roll the titles.
Let's roll the titles.
The Dead Tech Podcast with Peters and Lee.
No, it's not Peters and Lee. It's Peter and Lee. This is podcast number 13. Ooh. So I'm going to call it lucky number 13.
Excellent. I'm not saying that we're the older crew here on this particular broadcast today, but you know, you got to give the older guy a chance.
That's cool.
My definition of winging it is that you just need to be able to think quickly and know more than the next person in the room.
I'll witter on until you stop me.
Okay.
Are you sat in a wine cellar by any chance?
Brandon, sorry about me. I, if I sound like I've got a cold, it's because I have.
Bless you.
Hello and welcome. I'm Peter Walk and I'm joined today, as always, by my trusty Trustfolio colleague, Lee Usher. Hi, Lee.
Hi, Peter.
Good. How are you doing?
The podcast, yes, good, all good. Cold, snowed outside, but otherwise good.
Excellent. And we are delighted to have with us today Chris Leslie, who is the chief exec of the CSA. Chris, you took over running the CSA from me just about 3.5 years ago. And I have to say, I thought it was an excellent choice. Extremely well connected, a former MP and Shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer, no less, during Mr. Miliband's leadership. I'm quite sure we could spend all the podcast and longer talking about the current state of the economy. We might return to that a little bit later on, actually. But to start with, we'll stick to our area, the financial services industry. And actually, even before we do that, we do have a little bit of a habit of trying to introduce our guests and the sort of things that they do in their spare time, their sporting habits, maybe. I don't know. I know for a fact you're not an avid footballer, but you probably still know more about football than I do. Everybody does. And you're actually not a football fan, but what do you follow?
Well, Peter, honestly, I follow you at the Credit Services Association. That's the first thing to say. You can't introduce me with all that flattery without me reciprocating and saying what a pleasure it was to be your successor. You left it in such a great state, and I've been trying my best ever since. But no, you are right to point out my football knowledge is not necessarily as good as, well, either my daughter's or my wife's or basically anybody else's. But I have a little sort of obsession currently with tennis, and it's actually a very, very good sport. I mean, I've lost a lot of weight with it, and I'm really enjoying it because you don't really feel as though you're exercising. It's sort of like an hour, 2 hours goes by, and you think, oh my goodness, that was actually quite fun. Mm. So I think I'd probably rather play it than watch it, but I have been known to travel around a few of the ATP finals around the different cities of the world. So, not in the middle of winter necessarily, but there's a good set of fixtures on the horizons.
Well, as we speak, I don't know what the weather's like with you, but certainly outside here, the ground is covered in snow. It's actually quite thick here in sunny downtown Standish. But that's probably, well, I know that's put a few people off their tennis matches today if they're playing outside. But so any favourites for Wimbledon this year coming up?
Well, I mean, you've got to think Djokovic, you know, one for the, I'm not saying that we're the older crew here on this particular broadcast today, but, you know, you've got to give the older guy a chance sometimes. And, you know, that guy can keep going and going and going. But some of the younger, new gen, next gen are sort of coming up on the heels, Alcaraz and Rune and all those guys. But, I like to see my tennis takes the best from all of their elements.
Right, it's a mature view.
Bring it on.
Mature,
what I say.
Mature,
yeah,
view.
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, let's get into the podcast itself. I often say when I'm asked that the when I was at CSA, IVAs were on the radar, but not really on the agenda for us as such. You know, Deb Byers used to ask questions about them when something popped up, I suppose what I wanted to start talking about today was whether the FCA's consumer duty has changed that at all. Has it changed the attitude of things? And the reason I ask about IVAs is because Trustfolio was originally set up as a platform to make the exchange of data and voting and all that sort of thing between IPs and IVA proposals and creditors much, much easier and more efficient and help them do the right thing. Do you think CSA members have taken a slightly different view of what they're doing in that arena yet as a result of consumer duty?
I wouldn't. I mean, we're still sort of early days consumer duty, I suppose, from July last year. So there's been a sort of flurry of preparedness and implementation plans. And then once things got going, everybody's been sort of waiting to see whether the regulator's going to sort of intervene or take any particular action in any way, which hasn't happened so far. I personally think that our sector, the debt purchase and collection sector, is pretty good at assimilating to higher standards, not least because it gets a lot of flack and a lot of criticism, so tends to want to be naturally more professional. And it's sort of doubly regulated, both from, if it's consumer credit, from the FCA. We at the CSA have got our code of practice, of course, as well for the unregulated sector. But the creditors themselves go in with their clipboards, metaphorically, and you know, each client will have its own, you know, checklist and audit of the way collections agencies and purchasers operate. And so they are pretty used to being looked at through the microscope. But I think you're right to say that it's never been sort of front and center of the kind of regulatory concerns of collections agencies or purchasers. They all know the way that the process works and the way that they're, you know, voting on outcomes should happen. I suppose what will be interesting to sort of test is whether the creditor interest has been sort of superseded more by the consumer interest, best interest.
Yeah.
I think they were already pretty by default interested in making sure that any IVA or arrangement was sustainable, and there's no point, you know, stacking something up that's bound to fail, because that's not in any creditor's interest at all. So the sustainability point, I think, continues, but whether it's now less about getting sort of payments back to the creditor in the first place and more about helping the customer get out of the hole, I mean, I think that feels to me as though where the consumer duty emphasis is probably going.
No, I think that's probably right. I think there's a lot of talk at the moment about, you know, sort of consumer duty and where it extends to, and I think quite a lot of people trying to push an agenda. But I think, you know, one thing that concerns me a little bit is the general exchange of data with debt solutions. So I'm talking about DMPs now and any of the sort of debt solutions. And it seems that the major players have sort of managed to improve the way they exchange data with creditors or buyers, but a little bit at the expense or limited by the sort of the means they've got to do that. And I'm just wondering if enough data passes around between debt advisor and creditor to be able to really help them understand what's happening with their customer.
I don't know. I mean, I think probably you can see in some of the discussions that are going on about vulnerability data issue that's currently under discussion, even in the debt advice sector. You know, this notion of whether you should have a clearinghouse, organizations that hold and share vulnerability flags between different creditors, different sectors, whether government departments or utilities, for example, should set up their own vulnerability registers of different types. So that discussion's kind of going along. I actually think one of the big inhibitors of that is a real wariness of data sharing because of the Information Commissioner's Office, the ICO, and the data, you know, GDPR, data protection, which has really stopped, you know, what you might regard as common sense sharing of data for fear of enforcement on a privacy breach of some sort or another. Right. That same anxiety you can see in the public sector on all sorts of things. You know, if you're in the health service, they don't necessarily share it with schools, for example, or vice versa. So that cross-sectoral willingness to share data is very, very poor still in this country. But the privacy issue tends to dominate the common sense best interest issue.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. One of the other things that sort of we've noticed quite a bit, we're applying the Trustfolio sort of platform across the local authorities in the UK, and still seeing with some local authorities a willingness and an ability to be able to take a single view of debt, but with quite a lot of them, even if there's a willingness to do it, structurally it's quite difficult for them to do. Certainly when I was at the CSA, we were trying to campaign all the time for everyone to try and collect debt or apply the same principles of collecting debt across the board, whether it be regulated or non-regulated industries, so local authorities or utilities and the like. How far away do you think we are from getting that agenda sort of pushed further? And what success has there been in the last 3 years or so since I was in the role?
I'm afraid it's a bit slow. I mean, I definitely think the pandemic didn't help massively. It sort of took any sort of progress on some of these things out of the way. And I think, sadly, we're still in a situation where quite a few corners of the public sector do tend to go straight to an enforcement or, you know, litigation type route, and not necessarily use the specialist skills of the collections sector. So it doesn't sort of necessarily do that. There's some improvements. I mean, the Cabinet Office responsibilities overseeing the coordination of this have just passed across to the Treasury's debt management team, and they have sort of their kind of approach to trying to promote a sort of fairer agenda. But it's very, I mean, I've always said, you know, there isn't one government. You've got 22 different governments. Each department, each local authority tends to do their own thing. Mm. And often those objectives are, you know, paradoxically straight to that enforcement point, rather than necessarily thinking of forbearance or rephasing payment plans and so forth that you can do more effectively in consumer credit, for example, because you can phase over a number of years, whereas annual budgeting in the public sector really means they want to close it all down by 31st of March. You know, I mean, this is just the way they tend to structure themselves.
Just following up on the public sector theme, it, like Peter says, it's an area or a sector we've been heavily involved in, me especially over the last 18 months. And I sort of take on board your points around their approach to collections and the use of enforcement agents, although that is evolving as well, we've seen over the last few months. I just wanted to sort of link this to your previous roles in politics, Chris, and something that's been said to me on more than one occasion is if we did have a change in government over the course of this year, maybe, would there be a different approach within local authority collections? Would it be a more supportive approach we'd see? Is that something you would agree with?
Well, you'd have thought that perhaps moving to what you might call, inverted commas, a more progressive, if there is a change of government, it would be thinking about the sort of least well-off in society and the impact of, indebtedness and problem debt on that side of things. But of course, a lot of local authorities are not going to have, and other government departments are not going to have pots of extra money. There's not going to be any more money available for them to, to spend. So collecting what is owed will actually become more important. And I get the sense, certainly from my successors in the sort of shadow treasury team, so, you know, they've been talking very much about cracking down on government waste, and that often that includes sums that are owed to government. They don't necessarily always sort of think about the ability to pay of those who owe government. You saw it certainly in a lot of the rhetoric recently around, you know, they would, you know, opposition were saying they would claw back a lot more of the bounce back loans or the COVID loans that were made by the Treasury for instance. Now that might be small businesses and others, and in a way quite right, because that was taxpayers' money that's at stake. So that's everybody's concern. But so I'm not necessarily sure that a change of government will sort of see a shift in the dial towards more leniency, for example, on collections or not. I think it might be that there is a sort of attention to, as money starts to becomes more scarce in the public sector, a lot of cuts are penciled in the future years. Whoever wins the general election, they're going to have to focus on collecting what's owed. So I think it could be, you know, pretty stringent stuff.
I suppose that the two don't need to be at odds. A supportive approach to collections can still be an effective approach to collections, and the efficiencies that technology, data sharing can bring to a collections process. A lot of this we see in the financial services sector, that is maybe something that local authorities need to start look at. But I totally get your point. I mean, unless they collect the monies that's owed, they can't fund the essential services. Yeah. And in that respect, they're a bit different to other credit organisations.
I mean, years ago, I was talking when I was in Parliament about moving to triannual or longer sort of budget cycles, so that if a local authority had really, you know, a need to offer forbearance to its residents for particular reasons, they could span one financial year to another. I think that would be a far more sensible way, getting people onto payment plans that they can afford, but of course the thing with a lot of local public sector charges is that they're recurring. They're not like taking out a loan one off. You know, the after you get past one financial year, another bill arrives. You know, and on it goes. So it's really hard.
We've had quite a few debt advisors or people running debt advice organisations on our podcast, and we've always asked them, you know, what they think is coming next. During COVID, we were expecting a huge, you know, sort of influx of people in financial difficulty. It sort of never quite panned out. It feels like that sort of surge has never really sort of got to us, that is always being forecast still. What are CSA members seeing? Is that any of that really materialised?
A little bit. I mean, we've kind of sort of tried to cast our net of data points a little bit more widely, and even just some spot surveys of sentiment about what's happening, which direction things are going from member firm to member firm of ours. And you're right, the expectation of that tsunami of default didn't materialise. I think people probably had more savings in aggregate. Some people didn't, but in aggregate, that tended to protect. You know, spending wasn't in certain areas as high as it might have otherwise been. I think settlements have been down. I mean, some of the repayment plans have been sustained relatively well throughout this period. There's always a sort of a time lag between what happens to a creditor and then what comes along, you know, in a year or two from the debt purchase or the collections agency. So this may still be something that is going to play out as cost of living factor comes through. But actually, most of our members are saying, yeah, they've been able to cope because they've been able to splay repayment plans over a longer period or offer forbearance. And actually, a lot of the story may well be that creditors didn't grant as much credit into sort of subprime as perhaps used to be the case 5, 6, 7 years ago. So the pipeline was a character that didn't lend itself as much to default as perhaps might otherwise have been the case. So, the economy story is going to be such an interesting one this year, because, of course, we've all been talking about cost of living in the narrative and media and so forth for such a long time. It does look as though we're sort of, you know, may well be, you know, skimming, not going into recession, actually, inflation may be coming down pretty well in the UK. Interest rates may be on the turn. I still think there'll be quite a filter through into rentals this year, rental prices, because a lot of buy-to-let and mortgage prices are going to be passed on to tenants. But, this sort of mortgage peak may well have been for a year or two only, and some people's mortgage may well have skipped that if they were on a five-year fix, for example. So actually, you can see this in the government's strategy towards, delaying a general election as long as they possibly can. They're waiting for the economic good news to maybe materialise over the summer. Yeah. I'm not sure it'll be spectacular good news, but it might not be the sort of, the terrible bad continuation of cost of living crisis that perhaps people have got used to.
Sure, sure. And one thing I was quite keen to ask you, because obviously it was my job a while back, but there's an awful lot of focus on vulnerability, a lot of focus on the consumer that the CSA members are collecting from and interacting with and finding the right solutions for and so on. What is the biggest issue for CSA members these days, though? I mean, in terms of running their own businesses and making it all work, it's got to be successful as a business to keep on doing what it's doing. Mm. What are the sort of the biggest issues really for CSA members these days?
I mean, there's a lot of change in the sector. There's a lot of mergers and acquisitions, and so there's lots of the tectonic plates are moving. I'd still say regulation and the approach of regulators is very much at the front and centre. Certainly doesn't affect all collections agencies if they're not involved in consumer credit, but this the FCA's consumer duty has been a massive question. And a lot of the compliance costs that come with some of the things flowing from that, for example, in the last couple of months, the FCA have said they want to collect a mountain of data, product sales data, they're calling it, across all financial services, not in collections specifically, but down to a very granular account level, basis, postcodes and amounts and all sorts of stuff, which is quite intrusive for a regulator to do that. And the compliance cost of that is high. Peter, you'll know, I mean, it's not a sector where there's massive margins at the best of times anyway. Sure. And so maybe that's going to drive, some firms to find things difficult, possible consolidations. I think that's coming. There's also a lot of pressure coming from onto the regulators from campaign groups and others. I mean, we've seen some recent campaigns on, that contact frequency should be limited, for example. And so that's quite a big question currently being discussed. But actually, the benefits of having collections agencies involved in this credit sort of cycle, I think are starting to become apparent, because there is a desire to see forbearance, there is a desire to see vulnerability identified and assisted, and unless you have people phoning people and talking to them and in dialogue and in engagement, often these things aren't discovered. Yeah. So there is some silver lining of hope, I think, that actually the skill set in the sector is becoming a little bit more appreciated. Because you can't really necessarily deliver consumer duty if you're a creditor without showing that you have the specialists to support that treating customers with carefully and fairly in that way.
One of the things I wanted to touch on is the FCA's consumer duty. Whenever I've heard the FCA talk at conferences and events, they seem to come out with the same sort of description of it. They don't really sort of tailor it to individual industries. It feels quite a broad brush approach in a way. And I'm seeing, and this is on the FCA's own webinars, but also in the press, action being taken or focus from a consumer duty viewpoint being taken to certain areas of financial business. So investment firms, for example. But, I think when I saw it all come through, it's a case of, we're doing quite well already. So what is this extra layer going to do for us? And obviously, I was non-exec of a firm at the time. We did take a look at absolutely everything. And I think we did uncover, some areas where, that could be better. That could be improved. We might need to focus on that a bit more. Have the FCA got this right? Is it too broad brush? Have they framed it correctly?
Yeah, I mean, most firms are you know, absolutely embracing it, partly because treating customers fairly sort of took them a long part of the way. I mean, the emphasis is now much more proactive. They have to prove that good outcomes, in inverted commas, are available. I don't think even the FCA would claim that they designed the Consumer Duty with, for example, collections and debt purchase in mind. They were thinking about classic savings and loans and those kind of things.
Yeah.
And they've sort of had to bend it and push it into shape to fit those other corners of the financial wider financial services community where it doesn't quite work. So they've come up with slightly convoluted concepts about manufacturers and distributors, which don't always fit perfectly. Yeah. But look, most people know what they're getting at. And, you know, the core principles about fair value and consumer understanding, customer support, those kind of things, they do cut across most sectors. Personally, for a collection sector, I just think some of the phrases have been very clunky. So talk about good outcomes. Well, not in our sector, what if you're getting into individuals into litigation or enforcement? There's not many customers who are going to say, do you know what? That was a good outcome for me. A fair outcome, I think, would have been a better descriptor. So yeah. Because the creditor does have an interest. It's not a case, unfortunately, that the customer is always right in every circumstance. Sometimes they do default unfairly and harm the person that has lent them. And that can be, you know, many people. So I think something that reflected the fact that actually creditors do have a need to collect should be a little bit more recognised. But in practice, the FCA have been pretty pragmatic about it and have shared with us and trade bodies, you know, well, they're going to be realistic and they're not going to literally take it to the nth degree. And that's a good sign from the regulator. But we've got to keep a watch on how they're progressing with this.
I think when I first heard about it, you know, there was this sort of a hint that there might be almost a duty of care placed upon regulated firms, which would have been particularly onerous from a legal point of view. So I think the naming of it, the sort of the consumer duty as opposed to a duty of care as such, sort of did take a little bit out of our way. But I think I understand your point, certainly the fair outcomes, but I suppose they had to move away from treating customers fairly to a degree. So
They're sort of semantics here are pretty clear, but ultimately, if you believe that credit is a good thing in society, and I personally do, because a lot of people need credit to get from one payday to the next, the quality of life that they have, the standard of living does require on, you know, people can't afford everything from their savings. You know, you need to span from one payday to the next sometimes. And so credit does help improve living standards, but of course has to be done responsibly. Mm. And, you know, the customer, yes, has an obligation, but also the creditor does as well at the outset. So I think things are going so far so good, but the test will be to see what enforcement action the FCA take and where it goes.
Yeah, no, excellent. No, Chris, you've definitely won the award for the best, concisest answerer of questions. That's no slur on anybody we've interviewed, by the way, but clearly you've had lots of experience of answering tough questions, much tougher than the ones we give you. But it's been a real pleasure to have you on, actually, and thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. And it's a bit like appearing on the Today programme. It brings it all back for me here. You know,
if only I had the skill to be able to ask the questions those guys do. You know, in fact, I never got interviewed by Jeremy Paxman. I think I'm grateful for that.
No, I had many experiences with him.
but Chris, seriously, thank you very much. We thoroughly enjoyed it. And yes, look forward to perhaps calling you back on at some point in the future as well, if you'll join us again.
Of course, anytime.
Brilliant. Lovely. Thanks, Chris. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Chris.
Cheers.
See you later. Thanks. Bye-bye.
So that's podcast number 13 in the bag. Lucky number 13, I think it was there, for Chris Leslie, Chief Executive of the CSA. Remember to keep an eye out on LinkedIn for details of podcast number 14, which we'll be advertising in the next couple of weeks. We'll be announcing who we've lined up, and as usual, we'll be asking them to talk about their field of specialism and how they see digital resources being better used to help customers in financial difficulty. In the meantime, though, if you'd like to know a bit more about what we lovingly call Debt Tech, then head over to trustfolio.co.uk on the World Wide Web.